Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for The Christophers, and on today's show, I'll be talking with director, writer, and producer Randall Wallace, who's known for movies like Braveheart, The Man in the Iron Mask, and Heaven is for Real. Randall recently wrote a memoir called Living the Braveheart Life, Finding the Courage to Follow Your Heart. I'll be chatting with the Academy Award nominee about the book, the desperate prayer to God that led him to write Braveheart, and the lessons we all can draw from the movie. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi. Chances are you've seen the Mel Gibson movie Braveheart, about 13th century Scottish hero William Wallace and his fight for Scotland's independence. But did you ever realize that you could embrace the virtues of William Wallace in your own life? Well, Randall Wallace believes you can, and he should know since he wrote the Oscar-nominated screenplay for the movie. He's also written, produced, or directed many other popular films, including We Were Soldiers, Secretariat, and Heaven is for Real. But Braveheart was his first major screenplay, and on the film's 20th anniversary, he re-examines the story to share important lessons from it that we can all apply to our lives. Lessons that he personally experienced and wrote about in his memoir, Living the Braveheart Life, Finding the Courage to Follow Your Heart. To tell us more, I'm pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Randall Wallace. Randall, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Great to be with you. Thank you so much.
Now, you have this new book out called Living the Braveheart Life, Finding the Courage to Follow Your Heart. And in it, you point out that the movie Braveheart came out 20 years ago, which makes me feel really old because it doesn't seem like that long.
Doesn't to me either. It's remarkable to me that so many people still watch it and consider it their favorite movie ever.
Right. Well, what made you want to reflect on the lessons you learned from writing it and share them with other people now in this new book? Are these lessons that maybe have developed more in your mind over the last 20 years?
Yes. These are the observations that I've had, the lessons in living that have happened because of the success of Braveheart. Mm-hmm. I think success can be as dangerous as our frustrations and our setbacks, and I had to learn a great deal about it and started to ask myself, what would it take for me or for anyone to live a Braveheart life now in modern times? Mm-hmm. What are the elements that would help us have life and have it more abundantly? And that's what caused me to write the book.
Yeah, well, take us back a little bit to the story of Braveheart. You write a bit in the book, when you first visited Scotland and learned about William Wallace, what was it about his legend and also that of Robert the Bruce that struck such a deep chord within you?
When I first saw the statue of William Wallace, my first direct confrontation with his history and his legend, I noticed that his statue was side by side with Robert the Bruce. They were flanking an entrance to Edinburgh Castle. And I asked one of the guards who he was, and he said, Scotland's greatest hero, which excited me to think of a man who shared my name, mm-hmm. And the greatest hero of the country, but somebody I had never heard of, even though I had the same name, and I'm deeply interested in history. So I started to ask myself, how could his story have been lost to me? And I questioned the guard about whether William Wallace had been an ally of Robert the Bruce, because I knew some of the history of Robert the Bruce and knew he had fought the English for the independence of Scotland. Mm-hmm. And the guard said, no one will ever know for sure, which are great words for any writer to hear. But our legends say that Robert the Bruce may have been involved in the betrayal of William Wallace to clear the way for himself to be the king. Mm-hmm. And in hearing that, it was as if I had heard that Judas Iscariot and Saint Peter were the same person. Mm. I began to ask myself, what if there was something in the heroism and the nobility and the courage of the life that William Wallace lived, and even in the death that he died, that helped transform Robert the Bruce from a man who would betray a patriot of his own country into a man who could become the greatest king in his country. And that, to me, was the ultimate Christian story.
Yeah.
The idea that we're all lost, we're all broken, and none of us are beyond salvation and transformation. And transformation like that, a real, deep, profound change in who we are, has fascinated me all my life and is the basis of my faith.
Sure. I'm talking to Academy Award-nominated screenwriter Randall Wallace. He wrote Braveheart. We're talking about his new memoir, Living the Braveheart Life. And as you just mentioned, one of the appeals of the story for you as a writer is that there really wasn't a lot known about William Wallace's life, so you could let your creativity take over. But at the same time, I remember as watching the movie, there's a lot of truth in this movie, even if we don't know how factual it is. How did you come to learn that something that conveys truth doesn't necessarily need to be completely factual?
Well, that's one of the biggest hurdles, I think, for any writer, for any of us.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine who was a company commander in the first Iraq War was right on the battle line, and is a brilliant young man. He ultimately went to Yale, and he studied history. And he told me that being directly involved in a battle caused him to doubt the veracity of all history, because he said things happened in that fighting, and he would question various men who were right there side by side on the line. And they would give him entirely different accounts of what they had seen and done.
Wow. And
if our present history is like that, then certainly our past history is all about interpretation. As one historian once said to me, history doesn't reflect the time it's written about. It reflects the time it's written in.
Mm-hmm.
So what that says to me, basically, is that we live everything, we tell all of our stories as metaphors.
Yeah.
They're all meant to reflect some truth that's actually inside of us. That's how we recognize whether it's true. I believe that Braveheart shone a light on the interior lies of all of us, that told us that we said to ourselves, I believe this because I know this is true in me. I know that part of me wants to compromise, wants to find the easiest way out. Part of me wants to stand up and declare who I am, no matter what the consequences are. And that we live in that battle, and that's what our lives are about.
Yeah. Well, and your father, as you write about in the book, is one of the people who lived that kind of battle. You say he exemplified a brave heart, but he also had to deal with a world that was often hostile to him, and he had his own emotional wounds. So tell us a little bit about him, and how did he exemplify a brave heart in your eye?
Well, I came to see, when I was working through this whole story and reflecting on the life of my father, who, by the way, my father passed away 14 years ago today. My father died on 9/11, the notorious one of 2001. And his passing was one of the great catalysts of me reflecting on all of this, as was my mother's passing. My mother passed away just before we began the filming of Heaven Is For Real.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to think of there being five pillars of a Braveheart life, that it's vital to have a father and to be a father, even if you don't have a biological child, you can still be the father to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
and that's vital. It's crucial to become a warrior, even if you're not fighting, you know, with swords on a battlefield. You have to learn that warrior spirit inside you. It's vital to have a teacher and be a teacher. Vital to find a holy man, a priest, a sage, someone in your life that's that. And also vital to find your outlaw spirit. So my father exemplified all of that for me. His father died before he was born.
Mm-hmm.
my father was what in the South they call a posthumous child, hard to say.
Okay.
His dad had died 8 months before he was born of typhoid fever.
Mm.
So my father grew up without a direct biological father to teach him what it was like to be a father, and yet he became the greatest of fathers to me. So he overcame great obstacles, and it is an example of the pains that he had. He knew how important a father was because he didn't have one directly in his life. He also became a warrior who had wounds, and his wounds, while difficult to experience for him and for all of us around him, his wounds prodded him and shaped him and taught him how to be a greater warrior. He was also a sacred figure in my life. My father showed me what prayer really meant and what love really meant. So he exemplified these elements that I call the pillars of the Braveheart life.
Right. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I'm talking to Randall Wallace about his memoir, Living the Braveheart Life. Randall was also the screenwriter, Academy Award-nominated screenwriter of Braveheart. He's also written, directed, and produced some of the most successful movies of the last 20 years. He mentioned Heaven is for Real. There's also The Man in the Iron Mask, We Were Soldiers, Secretariat, Pearl Harbor. Now we're talking about his dad's influence on him and the influence of Braveheart on moviegoers and the stories that it was telling. We're just talking about his late father's influence on his life. And you mentioned that your dad kind of gave you the example of faith, and you're obviously a Christian man. It's imbued in this book, Living the Braveheart Life, that Christianity, that faith. But how did you see, because a lot of people are exposed to Christianity, to faith as young people, but then they kind of drift away from it or give it up. What made it take root in your life that made it so real?
I think one of the things that caused Christianity to become so in the cells of my body was that I had a great struggle too.
Mm-hmm.
And part of my struggle was that my parents, who loved me with all of their hearts, wanted me to do something secure, something that they had never had the opportunity to do because they had never been able to have a formal education, a college education. And they sacrificed so that I could have one. And then I didn't want to be a lawyer or doctor, something, a profession that they thought would be secure. And the first thing all parents want for their children is safety and security.
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt torn apart by the knowledge that the calling I had was to do something other than what my parents wanted me to do, and I wasn't being successful at it, but I didn't know how to do anything else. So I had a profound need of the faith.
Mm.
I saw it not as an abstract idea, but as a desperate question about, you know, who will you serve?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I look at the commandments and, you know, you will have no other gods before me, I began to recognize that if I worshiped Hollywood, if I worshiped the idols of money or fame or approval, in fact, you can take the Academy Awards as the prime example of idolatry, and I mean, it is literally the worship of the golden idol. And when I went through that experience, Braveheart winning 5 Academy Awards, and thinking if this becomes crucial for me, if it becomes vital, even important for me, to think of what the awards are, whether I win or don't win, that's not actually winning. I have lost my soul if what I am doing is worshiping what is not truly God. And that question was life and death, literally. I believe that. I believe it eternally, and I believe it now. I would say to people, the great question to me of Christianity is not even so much, do we have life after death, but is there life after birth? Do you want to be alive right now?
Mm-hmm.
That's what, to me, living a Braveheart life is how can you live now and have life fully, have it more abundantly?
Yeah. Well, in the book, you reference a quote that says, I underline this here, it's, I spent my life seeking God and discovered God was always seeking me. Was the Academy Awards, was that the primary realization of that? Or was it another point in your life where you thought God was pursuing you?
It really happened, I would say. Of course, I would say it's through my whole life and everyone's whole life that is what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we are made, my understanding, and I grant you that this is just my limited understanding and it's my metaphor of now, but that the whole purpose of our creation was for love, mm-hmm. that God is love, that God wants us to love God, that is the reason that we have free will. I'm no theologian, but that's the way it all makes sense to me.
Sure.
And the way actually that I got to Braveheart and to Academy Awards stuff had to do with this whole question, which was I was at a point when I was facing financial ruin. I talked about this in the book. I'd had a really good run in television where for the first time in my life, I had money and then had more money than I needed and had a young family and bought a beautiful home for us. And I figured that would be where my sons would grow up and had them in good schools and it just had a sense of a rosy future. And then there was a writer strike out of the blue, and suddenly it went on and on. It 8 months of no work, and I'd gotten a huge mortgage and all the things that I thought I could easily cover because I had a long-term contract with the company to write, and the strike caused that company to suspend all of the contracts, which they had a right to do. But also when the strike was over, my resources were all depleted, and the company's resources were depleted, and I was facing disaster, and I was so overwrought by this I couldn't work, and work had always been the way I dug myself out of the holes that mm-hmm. I'd found myself in. So got down on my knees and I prayed from the depth of my soul and said to God, if what is best for my sons is that they don't grow up in a house with a lot of bedrooms and bathrooms and a swimming pool, and they grow up as I did in a two-bedroom house with one bathroom or sometimes no bathroom, and they have an economic struggle in their life, that might be the best thing for them. And if that's what's best for them, then I pray for the strength to bear it. But if I only have one more thing that I can write before I have to go find some other way to feed my family, then let me write what I want to see on the screen. Let me write the kind of movie I want to be the audience for. And let me go down with my flag flying, not on my knees, to the false idols of Hollywood. And that was the prayer that changed my life and was a turning point for everything, not just my career, but everything else in my life.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Randall Wallace about his memoir, Living the Braveheart Life, Finding the Courage to Follow Your Heart. He just talked about the desperate prayer which led him forward in his life, which eventually led to him writing the movie Braveheart, which celebrates its 20th anniversary this year. You know, I was struck by also the passages in your book. When you're writing about your college teachers, the Pavlovs, who survived the siege of Leningrad during World War II, and I'm just curious, what did you learn from them and other people like that about who they faced overwhelming tragedy and struggle, and yet they still seem to live a joyful life? Is joy a choice, do you think?
I think joy is a choice, and I think it also is the outcome of faithful suffering.
Mm.
The Pavlovs are an incredible example. I'm moved that struck you, that you noticed that. They lived with such vibrance, and I had asked her once, Mrs. Pavlov, who was my teacher for my first year of Russian, if she had been able to take anything with her when she left Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And she paused and said, three times in my life, I have been somewhere where someone ran into the room where I was sitting and said, if you don't get up and run that way right now, you'll die.
Wow.
And I could take nothing with me, three times in my life. And she said, I have no regrets. And it caused me to think about what we consider the necessary stuff in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
I need this, I need that, to be happy. But she had gone through the crucible of knowing that those things were unnecessary, that what made life
mm-hmm.
was love. And she and her husband had survived all of this, had come through it all together, and each day that she got up, when there was peace, when there was a chance to work at something she loved doing, that she loved to teach. There's so many students, people, teachers who don't, but she would look you in the eye, and her eyes would shine when she saw the light bulb going off in your head about how to understand something that she was teaching. And she's one of the great reasons that I say the teacher is one of the pillars of a Braveheart life. And that oftentimes the best way to learn is for you yourself to become a teacher of something.
Sure. No, I'm you know, that's so true about the teachers in our lives. And I was impressed not just by the fact that you pointed out the Pavlovs in the book as teachers in your life, but even just in the dedication of the book, you write, you thank the teachers and friends who've shared their lessons in their hearts and the enemies who have taught me too. Now, learning from our enemies can require quite a bit of humility and a mental leap. So how did you do it? And is there a specific lesson you recall that, say, an enemy taught you? Because that's, again, to me, that's another symbol of living the Braveheart life that you're talking about.
Wow. Yes, it is. And it's one of the hardest ones. I suppose it's fair to say that part of the Braveheart life for me is the recognition that someone that you first think is your enemy may in fact not be at all, may be somebody that God has placed in your way to teach you, to force you to be stronger. That's certainly been true in the people along the way who have rejected things that I've done. Braveheart did not go through a lot of rejections, but so much of my other work has, things that have become successes. I tell my sons now that I never want them to believe, because it's easy for them to have the impression that what their father does is scribble some on pages and hand them to somebody else who then hands me a check.
Mm-hmm.
I've had 1,000 rejections for every time, 1,000 may be overblown, but mm-hmm. but hundreds of rejections for every time someone has told me they liked something that I've done. And those people who rejected me always felt like enemies. But I would have to ask myself, why do they not see in this what I see?
Yeah.
And one of the, you know, I grew up Baptist, and Baptists are totally evangelical.
Mm-hmm.
We almost never had a religious gathering in which there was not some effort to have conversion, an offer of people to convert, to become Christian. I also want to say that there are times when I go to church with Catholic friends, and I love the sacredness of the Mass. I love the sanctity that we experience there, and the understanding that everyone comes to God. They may come in their in the same service and in the same same doctrine or dogma, but we all have to come individually. We all come in our own way at our own time. And that sense that we have to face the enemies within us and the enemies outside us, and that in the end we can say all things work together for the good of those that love the Lord.
Very true. No, it's a beautiful ecumenical ideal you've just pointed out there. But, you know, we are all striving for the same thing. We may go about it a little bit differently, but ultimately the destination we're going toward is the same one. So it's great that you've been able to see that in your life and in the people around you. I want to thank Randall Wallace for joining me today to discuss his memoir, Living the Braveheart Life, Finding the Courage to Follow Your Heart. We are out of time, but we're going to keep talking and bring you more of our interview next time on Christopher Close Up. Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
No one is too far gone for God. Regardless of how many poor choices you've made, God is still willing to welcome you back with open arms if you sincerely ask for His forgiveness and try to change your ways. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called From Sinners to Saints. It profiles several people who chose to turn their lives around after experiencing God's love and grace. To request your free copy of From Sinners to Saints, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. That's 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness. We'll